This podcast is exclusively sponsored by Equiland, a global fintech firm for the securities finance industry.
Welcome back to another episode of Asia Securities Finance Monthly. And as always, this is Matt MacArthur in Hong Kong. Coming up on the show today, we catch up with one of the world's largest asset managers and see exactly how they fit into the securities lending landscape. And as PASLA opens registration for its annual conference, we talk to our CEO, Stephen Howard, about exactly what attendees can expect in Macau. Now, normally, we try and address topical APAC issues, but today, we are thinking outside the box. We have with us one of the largest beneficial owners on the planet, Pat Morrissey from Vanguard. Welcome to the podcast, Pat.
Thank you, Matt. Happy to be here.
Now, rumor has it, you've been at Vanguard for 20 years. In dog years for bankers, that's infinity, no?
Yes, close to. I've definitely spent a good amount of my career here at Vanguard in various roles within securities lending. So being able to help kind of build that expertise over time, I think has really kind of helped us, help Vanguard, help the industry as we start to traverse into new markets, new products, new kind of fund types.
Now, just for context for the audience, Vanguard is one of the world's largest asset management firms globally, and certainly a powerhouse in the securities lending world. Now let's get down and wordy. And no better way to start off an APAC equities conversation than with everybody's favorite topic, regulatory concerns. I know I can almost hear the collective yawn, but in fairness, it is high priority. Is there anything new regulatory-wise in Korea or Thailand that you might be able to highlight?
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Matt. So, you know, first and foremost, we think about regulation constantly and on a global basis. And so the regulatory bodies really in various markets have been extremely busy over the past couple of years. And certainly, as you note, South Korea, Thailand are no exception. And I'd say, you know, within those markets, we're paying particularly close attention to the impact that that's going to have on agent lenders, you know, in terms of overall settlement, how our trading behavior should be operational, and how we think about that from a product perspective and strategic perspective. And I think for us, we're always focused on making sure that we're frictionless or as frictionless as we can be to all of our counterparts, from our front office beneficial owners all the way down to the borrowing counterparts on the other end of the trade. So I think through that entire ecosystem, I think we're always focused on efficiency. And so to that extent, when we think about things like recalls, inventory, you know, degrading inventory, our availability that we want to show, we want to make sure that it's as risk adjusted as it possibly can be in relation to this ever-changing regulatory landscape.
Now, that sudden creak you just heard is me slowly opening Pandora's box. And what I'm gingerly dancing around is Vanguard in the last 6 months has moved some of their securities lending in-house, which is rather unprecedented, especially due to your size. And just to bring the audience up to speed, Vanguard has moved away from the traditional norm, which is using an agent lender like State Street or Bank of New York or even BlackRock, and is now lending some of their assets on their own behalf. If I'll be honest, I can't even paint by number. How on earth did you pull this off, Pat?
So I would tell you this. I think first and foremost, we've had a direct desk lending presence for over 30 years now. We've actually started lending predominantly on international securities, I would say about 15, 16 years ago, when we first started to get our feet wet and tiptoe into that ocean. I'd say over time, I think we realized a couple things. I think there's a lot of synergy for U.S. mutual funds, which is predominantly what we lend, and lending those foreign equities with things like corporate action activity, cash management, focusing on the end user, focusing on how we can constantly add value. I think for a large index fund company like us, I think we came to the conclusion a couple of years ago that we needed to build a solid technological infrastructure, great connectivity, great processes, fantastic people and staff to really begin to have that secondary conversation around being able to insource. And so I think our efforts in that space were really successful a couple of years ago. And that really kind of set the stage for us building the business case to want to insource, because we believe at the end of the day that that's a lot of value add for our end user shareholders.
Now, the first question that pops to mind is, walk me through the pros and cons of lending yourself.
Sure. You know, some of the pros that we see out in the marketplace, again, given our structure as a U.S. mutual fund, is number one, I mentioned this before, but it's really around corporate actions, corporate action activity, right? And our ability to talk directly with our portfolio managers, who coincidentally, most of them sit on the same trading floor as us. There's a huge synergy in that from a timeliness perspective and an accuracy perspective. And we really engage them to actually be part of the trade. Second off, in an age of regulation, especially around, you know, money market reform, the ability to manage cash more tightly within given constraints is becoming more and more important. So we see a big pro with that. And then, you know, I think third is, you know, being able to actually lend our securities right to the end user, right to that borrowing counterpart, removing kind of any frictions in terms of middlemen agent lenders relative to our size are really important attributes for the kind of program that we run. So we kind of look at those pros, and those pros are really significant relative to any cons that we might see. But, you know, I would say this, I'd say, you know, any external agent lender organization, for the most part, you know, they bring a lot of subject matter expertise to the table. So, you know, we want to make sure that whether we're talking about, you know, legal, tax, product, regulatory, you know, we want to make sure that we emulate those same functions that you would find, you know, in the most sophisticated banking agent lending organizations around the world.
I know you mentioned a few of them, but I assume there are mountains of challenges like onboarding clients and legal. Any color if I'm missing any?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I think, you know, there's an old fashioned line. And I think it really applies to securities lending, and that's devil in the details. So I think we've really kind of refined a lot of our processes, sometimes through trial and error, but oftentimes through, you know, subject matter expertise and the people that we have to really understand a process, right? Understand the life cycle, understand a new market, understand strategy, understanding, you know, the basic nuances of trading and those restrictions relative to being U.S. mutual funds. So when we think about that, we've spent a considerable amount of time and effort in making sure that our processes tie in very nicely to our policies to make sure that we're running a very well risk-adjusted lending program. So we have some really fantastic people working at Vanguard and Securities Lending behind the scenes that often don't get a lot of credit. But they really are the backbone and the support of what we do day in and day out. Because, you know, I said devil in the details. We also talk about weakest link in a chain. And that's especially true, again, in securities lending. So at the end of the day, you know, we try to think about all the different risks in all the different processes that we have. What could go wrong? How we can engage more deeply with even our own internal risk management team to make sure that we do a deep dive on almost every single aspect of our program to ensure it's the right risk-adjusted value for our clients.
Now, it does beg the question, any concerns about perception?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's always something that we think about, right? You know, there's kind of a couple different key risks in any securities lending program. One is certainly, you know, legal regulatory tax. Another is operational. Another is financial. But certainly there is reputational perception risk. You know, we want to be seen as doing the right thing at all times, and we align our policies and procedures as such. So, you know, one unique aspect of the Vanguard Securities Lending Program that I could speak to around that is really around just our ability to return all of our revenues, net of operating expenses, right to the shareholder. And that has the really unique aspect of aligning our interests with that of the client. And we find that that's really powerful. So when we think about things like reputational risk, you know, our clients can rest assured that the Vanguard Securities Lending Program is aligned with their motives.
And lastly, how do beneficial owners like Vanguard fit into the general landscape of securities finance?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, and I would say this, and you mentioned securities finance. We view ourselves more in the securities lending mantra. And really, that's partly because when we think about things like collateral reinvest, we think about things like high liquidity, right? We think about things like capital preservation. We think about, you know, having a really risk-adjusted program with, you know, what we're lending, what we're taking as collateral, who we're lending it to. You know, for us, you know, we're dedicated to the concept of right-way risk so that, you know, at the end of the day, when if something were to happen, right, in the marketplace, that we know that we're going to be more than well protected.
Now, we talked about lending physical stocks, but how do we lend synthetically? AKA swaps. I mean, most agent lenders have prioritized swaps as a need to have. So I assume this is an area of development for Vanguard?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would just say at a very high level, we're agnostic to whatever product it particularly is that we're utilizing. We do engage in swap. Obviously, we engage in securities lending. So, you know, I think being close to the portfolio management trading desk, like I mentioned before, is really a key aspect that allows us to unlock synergies and really extract the right value, right? And that could be through either product. But again, at the end of the day, it's we always look at this through the lens of what's in the best interest of our clients. So the short answer is yes, we do both products, but we will do that interchangeably or whatever makes the most sense relative to our constraints and what the client has in terms of best interest.
Now, there's no doubt that swaps are the future, but speaking about future topics, direct lending to non-traditional counterparties, is that on your radar? I mean, it's on everybody's radar, but how much of a priority is it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's a very timely question. You know, I think getting back to the regulatory landscape, regulation isn't just about new markets, right, or regions. It also impacts the counterparts that we do business with, depending on where their jurisdiction is. So we look at that and we study that. We spend a lot of time debating it in management meetings. And so ultimately, you know, I think we've taken kind of, I'll call it baby steps in saying, do some of the more, I'll call it non-banking organizations make sense as borrowing counterparts? It's a really interesting exercise to go through, especially with our risk management teams. And again, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to maximize that risk return trade-off, right? Whenever we lend a security, whenever we engage in a strategy, we want to make sure that anytime we deal with a counterpart, right, whether they're more the traditional borrowing broker dealers or some of the newer players in the marketplace, that they have the right operational procedures, policies, right? They know how to do business with a company like Vanguard, and they know what's expected of them. So we've spent a lot of time kind of looking at those key aspects and how we can align with those right partners to really generate the most ideal risk-adjusted value for our clients.
Now, this is a little Jeopardy on my part, so I'll take bad assumptions for 1,000, Alex. But do you see more beneficial owners like Vanguard lending in-house, meaning foregoing the traditional agent lender route?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. There have been beneficial owners that have, you know, dropped us notes from time to time asking how we do this, how we do that. We like to be good business partners in the securities lending marketplace. So that being said, you know, I think if you are a beneficial owner thinking about wanting to do lending direct yourself, you know, a couple things around strategy. What does your board think? What do your clients think? What do you hope to obtain from doing that? How do you have the right risk management program? Do you have the right people from a securities lending, securities financing perspective? We find that people, process, are two of the most key critical factors in the success of any securities lending business. So do you have that? I'd say, do you have the right technology and connectivity? How do you stack up relative performance-wise to external counterparts? So do you have the right assets? So we think about all of those different aspects within our own securities lending program. And that exercise is very continual, right? We're always evaluating. So I would say for those beneficial owners that are really wanting to do that, just know that this is a very dedicated and integral process, right? It's a very integral business. It's a very integral component to the global capital markets. So it needs to be taken with the utmost seriousness. So those are kind of some of the key considerations I would think of, right? As well as, you know, what's your overall philosophy on securities lending? How do you think about assets that you're long? How do you think about the collateral management on the back end? And how do you think about the counterparts that you want to do business with? So again, that's just kind of a quick high level snapshots of some of the things that beneficial owners really need to consider before they start to want to do this in-house.
I'm glad you mentioned about people and the process and corporate actions and legal, because I just default to critical mass. If you have the size, it's impactful, then we can dance. But to add those extra variables is almost sometimes overlooked. So I'm glad you certainly brought those up. And now I realize that every asset management firm has their own internal priorities, alpha and betas and deltas. I mean, it does sound like one of those really cool sorority parties that I never got invited to. But what are priorities on Vanguard's side regarding APAC? Specifically, where's the value add?
Yeah, I mean, from a securities lending perspective, I think we could say, look, you know, we've just entered Taiwan. We think there's a lot of really good risk-adjusted value in that marketplace. I think there's a tremendous amount of work that we've done over the past couple of years to make sure we have the right risk guardrails to really make sure that we're maximizing the risk-adjusted value. I'd say markets outside of Taiwan might include Indonesia and Philippines, which I know, you know, PASLA has been very vocal about in terms of their working groups and liaisoning with local exchange and regulatory participants. So we're very excited about those prospects. I'd say, you know, around the globe, you know, outside of the APAC region, I know it's probably not as popular to talk about that here, but I would say, you know, South America certainly has our attention. And certainly, you know, some of the newer markets such as Saudi Arabia are also going to be interesting as we get into the next 1 to 2 to 3 years out.
Pat, that was incredibly insightful. Anytime we can get a beneficial owner, no less one of the largest on the street, it's always great. I do appreciate your transparency and thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Asia Securities Finance Monthly returns in just a moment.
Registration is now open for the 2025 PASLA Conference on Asian Securities Finance in Macau. Join us February 26th and 27th for 2 days of carefully curated sessions with engaging speakers, deep dives into the key themes impacting our industry, and a look ahead to 2025. Register now for your space via the new PASLA event portal.
It is a pleasure to have with us today Stephen Howard, the CEO of PASLA. Welcome back, Stephen. It has been far too long since we have had you on.
It's great to speak with you again, Matt, and thanks for giving me some airtime today. I think it's been nearly a year, hasn't it?
It has, exactly. Now, PASLA seems to be expanding every year. New membership, bigger conference, more networking events. Explain the why.
Ooh, it's a great question. So I think to a large extent, this stems from all of the efforts that have been made by the board to help transition the association from being member-led to being a professional full-time staffing-led organization. And as a result of that, one of the key things that we wanted to do over the summer, one of the key initiatives, was to deliver some new membership structures that are appropriate for the industry as it moves forward. I think if we look back at the business activity, you know, the complexity and the regional geographic footprint means that member franchises may compete in one market, partner in another, be a client or be a provider in another location or another region. So the sort of securities finance industry needs and drivers are no longer these sort of parallel business lines where you can characterize an entity as being a borrower or a lender. So our new sector tilt hopefully provides improved alignment with those business interests in today's increasingly complex traded markets. So it's a long-winded way of saying we rationalize what we're doing. We've made it a lot clearer for existing members and new members to understand where they can anchor into the association. And I think that clarity has brought new members to the association. I think just in the last quarter, we've had 6 new members join. So we've had Barrenjoey, Bursa Malaysia, DLMX, Trading Apps, TD Securities, and Tiger Brokers, which are Tiger Brokers is our first retail aggregator. So we're starting to reach out to a broader audience, which is great.
You know, silly me, I thought it was all because of your dynamic podcast host, but
I'd say 85% of it was because of the dynamic podcast host, at least.
I'm sure that's very generous. And now, speaking of memberships, how is the pipeline looking?
I think the pipeline is very robust. It's probably the most conservative way of saying it. So much so that we're going to be bringing on board in November a new marketing and sales manager whose role is solely about membership engagement. So not only we should see an increase in the number of firms joining the association, but also a higher level of engagement and a higher, I guess, uptick in activity from our existing members as well. I mean, we've seen that as being something that's quite central to everything we're thinking about, because at the end of the day, the association is about delivering to our members. That is a critical factor for us.
Now, you mentioned that PASLA has recently expanded, hiring more staff. Tell me about the new role and responsibilities.
So we're on a journey to right-size the association for the aspirations of our members. So I think, you know, we've just started that process. We formalized that by moving the team into an office space. So PASLA took up its first office space ever when we moved into the Executive Center on Stanley Street earlier this month. And yes, we've made our first additional hire into the team, focusing on marketing and sales and really that member engagement. But we've got additional roles we need to add into the group, really because historically we've had quite a limited full-time footprint, and the aspirations of the membership as we've gone through this recalibration have changed. And that's good. So we want to make sure we have the appropriate level of staffing to support those aspirations. So I think we're probably halfway through that right-sizing exercise at the moment. So, you know, watch this space. More to do.
Now, the upcoming PASLA conference in February 2025 in Macau, as usual, a full house is expected. Beneficial owners, agent lenders, prime brokers from around the globe. Are you as excited about Macau as the market is?
Tremendously so. I mean, October has been an incredibly busy month for the association. We launched our brand new ticketing website for this, for our annual headline conference, which is very exciting. We're super excited to be holding this at the Galaxy International Conference Center. You know, this is a purpose-built conference center with some amazing facilities. It's separate, it's distinct, it's not attached to a casino, it operates at scale. It really is, I guess, the premier content delivery vehicle for our industry across all of the thought leadership and professional networking events that we want to be delivering in February. And you sort of add to that the fact that 2025 marks the 30th anniversary for the association. So, you know, I think we're all particularly excited that we're able to do this in Macau. It's right next door to Hong Kong, so much more accessible for all of our members. And at the same time, we've got high expectation that more of our member firms will be able to bring their teams in to attend both the conference and the gala dinner. And not wanting to over-promote this, but go and book your tickets now. You know, I'd strongly encourage member firms and attendees to book early, benefit from those early bird ticketing rates, and also the room block that we've secured with the hotel.
Stephen, that was fantastic. All the best with the upcoming conference in February, and I will see you in Macau.
I will definitely see you in Macau. Thanks, Matt. Take care.
We'd love to hear your feedback. If you have any questions or comments about topics you've heard on the show, please drop us an email at podcast@paslaonline.com. That's it for this edition of Asia Securities Finance Monthly. I'm Matt MacArthur in Hong Kong. Join us next month for more updates and analysis.
This podcast is exclusively sponsored by Equiland, a global fintech firm for the securities finance industry.